So we're talking about Disney today. In episode, this is episode 3, isn't it? Episode 3. Yes,
it is.
003, Ray Tracing. So,
what do you know about ray tracing, Callum?
Hang on, I feel like I'm not in the headspace right now. I'm not there yet. I'm so tired. Hang on.
But let me kick it off then.
Right.
Let me take it away. All right. Today,
cut.
Every week is a banger. Every week's a banger. This week, we're looking at a paper called "The Design and Evolution of Disney's Hyperion Renderer." Yeah, we're going to get into some natty topics like ray tracing, bundling, lights, shading, global illumination, and all in the name of making darn pretty pictures.
Very pretty.
Pretty much.
What did you make of the paper?
I was really blown away. It's kind of just really awesome.
It's really good. It was a mammoth task to get through. So,
absolute mammoth.
I would say I've done like one solid reading and I've got over the, well, I don't know, maybe not as solid as your solid, but I've paid extra attention to the examples that were in there, of which there were, what, 3, 4, 5, something like that. So I'm looking forward to talking about everything there. So this is a little bit of a callback to our Fong last season, in the pilot season. Obviously, we talked about what was that? That wasn't ray tracing. It was like 3D modeling, wasn't it? And lighting. Yeah.
Yeah. So Fong, I think it was back in the 70s, if I recall correctly. And that was early computer graphics, and it was a shader model. So rather than being physically based, the shader model is, I'm just going to do a calculation that approximates close enough how a thing looks. Hey, dog.
She doesn't want to come up yet. She will.
Not interested.
She will. Give it time.
Yeah, so a bit of a callback to the Fong shading model.
Except this is obviously... when was this published? 2018. Yeah, July 2018. So it's a lot more modern, I suppose. Much more modern. We're talking like 50. Yeah. If Fong is 70s, as you record, that's 50 years, isn't it? It's a long old time.
Close enough.
It's a long old time.
So Disney's Hyperion Renderer, not Pixar, Callum.
Yeah, so this was... so. It's interesting because I wrote Disney in our show notes, right? So I knew, but like, I guess I hadn't really realized that they were like distinctly different things, you know? To me, it's Disney Pixar. Hello, Wilma.
Yeah. Well, so like, I guess the history there is from like the 1980s with Beauty and the Beast, Disney and Pixar have been working together on animation.
Yeah.
And so Pixar, they developed RenderMan, which is their render engine. And Disney was using that since the 80s. And so this is like a step change from beyond that. So rather than using Pixar's RenderMan, they're now using their in-house Hyperion.
Nice. Render.
So like they do the same sort of thing, but what are the high-level changes? Having it in-house so they can... tweak it as they see fit.
Of which there seems to be a lot of tweaking, having glanced through this paper. Like, they do a lot on
the
fly,
from the ground
it seems.
Up,
yeah.
New architecture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems to be very commonplace. Like, we have a specific problem. We need to build something that will fix this specific problem whilst also enabling our animators to make pretty things.
Yes, so the RenderMan uses a render everything you ever saw algorithm, which is kind of just, if you recall back to Fong, where they might have trouble with what's an obscured surface, or like, I only need to render the surfaces I can see.
We talked about Horizon Zero Dawn, how you only get what's in front of your character. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, exactly. So motivations that they had when going into this is not so much photorealism, but they wanted to increase artist productivity. They were just like burdened down with making shadow maps and point clouds.
Yeah.
They wanted to use global illumination, and when they tried ray traced stuff, it was too difficult. But path traced stuff, which is like a little bit different, was what they ended up on. And like the from an architecture perspective, which is we're already into the meat and potatoes of the paper. The meat and potatoes is
you love the meat and potatoes. There it is.
Is their architecture for how they sort their rays into batches. So if you think you're like sending loads of rays and they're just making new rays all the time as they bounce off surfaces, maybe I need to take a step back and explain some ray tracing.
Maybe we are running before we can walk. Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
So let's take a step back then. Talk to me about sort of the premise of the paper. And what we mean by ray tracing. And if there is like a particularly good quote that you think sums it up, please point me towards it.
I got no good quote. I've got some quotes later on.
I saw them. They're good. They're good quotes.
Yeah. So ray tracing is take a from the frame of your camera for every single frame and every single pixel, trace a ray out of that pixel and then direct it to a surface, bounce it off the surface in a bunch of different directions, and then go to another surface and then scatter from that. And eventually, some of those rays, all of those rays should come from a light source. I think it's all of them, I'm not quite sure. But most of those rays should go back to a light source, like that you're tracing them back to their point of origin.
That's really interesting. I feel like I have a big misconception then, because I always was under the impression that the rays are drawn from the light source, but you're now telling me they're drawn. That's so interesting.
It depends.
Okay.
You can apply directional path or like ray tracers, and they specifically note here that they're not doing that. Okay, I'm assuming in terms of
I clearly read it very attentively.
it's a tiny like note early
it's
on.
This is a 22 page paper. It's a behemoth, isn't it?
Yeah, I had to come back and double check that one. But they are a unidirectional path tracer from the camera to the light, which like it introduces some difficulties. They mentioned about how this would be solved with bidirectionality. Yeah, so it's unidirectional, coming from the camera, tracing all of the pixels to their light source. And when you trace it, the things that you're trying to capture here by being physically based is light-matter interaction. Mm. Like now we're getting into physics things.
Yeah.
And when a photon of light travels through an atmosphere or like a medium, it has some interaction. Like if you go through some smoke or a misty background, it has some absorption or attenuation. If you go through... You bounce off a surface, then you've got like specular reflection and diffuse reflections. Specular is like really targeted, bouncy reflection, like off a mirror, and diffuse would be
a bit more random.
The dull random reflection, like either through a cloud or from a carpet or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you're doing lots of bounces and reflections and. Yeah.
It's essentially a big physics model, I suppose. That's how I kind of
That's exactly
think about
what it
it
is. Yeah. Yeah. So the from an artist's perspective, one of the things they spend a lot of time on is texture maps. I don't really know what this looks like other than like draw some square. That's like your texture. I guess you could think of it as like a bit like your wallpaper strips. Like if you just take a patch of wallpaper. And then you repeat it.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you're doing. Like your texture app is just saying, this is the pattern I want repeated.
I remember reading the texture map bit, but I have no comment on it. I think it was just a bit confusing to me, to be honest. I just did a control F for texture maps, and there are only 7 matches, to be fair. I don't know. Can you explain the square thing a bit more to me? Because I recall reading it, but I don't really understand it.
Well, for texture maps.
Yeah, I mean, I know you said you'd talk to me about it.
Well, if you're a graphical artist, I think it's like commonplace. So, like in video, in animations, in video games, in other places where you'd like to random render graphical images.
I'm
in a texture map. I'm just thinking like Blender is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so texture maps, they're patterns that you apply to a surface of 3D model, and they have repeating textures, patterns, or special visual effects. And so, yeah, like, things you can describe here are like the reflectivity, you can describe how rough a thing is, how metal it is, its specularity, whether it's opaque or transparent.
It makes a bit more sense, I think, to me, thinking about it in terms of, like, video games. I think back to, like, when I played, like, Elder Scrolls Oblivion, and you'd look up at the mountains.
Yes.
Except it would just be the same little rock.
Yes.
Similar.
It's like that.
Hello again.
Here's a pattern. Come here. Repeat.
Come.
So yeah, that's texture maps. And as an artist, the impression I get is that's what they spend a lot of time on. So like we could honk all the way down to like figure 16. So no, way down near the bottom.
Fig 16.
But like here is a good example of like what an artist sees, and it's kind of mind blowing because they give you like the whole
so I
the whole pipeline. And
I
then
definitely didn't really look at this. I was very confused.
Anyway, what we can see like a grid with like, I don't know, 30, 40 boxes, and I'm guessing each of these boxes are like render sources, maybe like rendering under different conditions, and they're. So when you're compositing your scene as a graphical artist, you're taking a bunch of different renders and gluing them all together as just like layers. You're just stacking a bunch of layers up to get the desired effect.
Which is, you know, if we're talking about it from artistry point of view, that's no different to, you know, I've watched Bob Ross. I've seen how he does an oil painting. It's just layers. It's mind-numbingly confusing, though, isn't it? It's so complex.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty nuts. So the whole purpose of this, it's not a study. It's just a thing they did so they wanted to transition from RenderMan. And if you think of it from the perspective of we're a company that needs to do a thing to make money, and what you're saying is we want to change entirely how we do the thing.
Yeah,
like that's a crazy like. Monumental task.
I suppose it highlights just how rich Disney is if they can do that. They must be making bank.
Well, I mean, you know they're making bank.
Definitely.
But what it highlights was if you're trying to make this like this tool that your entire company uses to make the dollar, what's the MVP to be able to achieve a production ready renderer? And like this paper, it's not really a paper in the terms of hypothesis, method, results, discussion, but it's a like here's some case studies, but then there's a whole section on doing production ready or getting it production ready. So a bit more like timeline context for this. So this was, although the paper was published in 2018, it was first used on Big Hero 6, which was released in 2014. You can imagine the development for that was like 3 years or so, 2011 to 2014. I don't know why I was pointing out that timeline.
I don't know either, but I'm finding the Big Hero 6 reference. So this is probably a good moment to talk about the case studies. If you are a YouTube viewer, you will see it. If you're not a YouTube viewer, the link to the paper will be in the show notes. I'm looking at figure 2. It says scenes in Big Hero 6 featured anywhere from hundreds of lights, top, to thousands of lights, middle, to hundreds of thousands of lights, bottom. And that is a huge cityscape with, you know, town houses and lights reaching all the way back to the to as far away as possible.
And it kind of looks pretty inconspicuous when you look at it. You're just like, oh, that's a pretty.
To me, it looks like a picture.
Yeah,
which I guess
it looks completely reasonable.
It looks like a photograph.
It's not. We've been conditioned by like animation films over the last 20 years that like 20 years, but like. That's just fine. That's just an animation. You're just making something that looks darn fine.
Yeah.
But the nuance here is that this is global illumination path tracing, which means they've defined all of the physics that goes into that scene. So every single one of those lights is a light source. And all of the bounces, they're all like there. Physical bounces.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. I had a thought actually while looking through this paper. It kind of dawned on me that I feel like Disney movies, like the modern animated Disney movies, are they're like a really interesting mix between like hyper-realism and art style.
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
like that city scene to me, and even the one above it, just looks like
just
a
looks
photograph.
Real,
like
man.
It's the art style mm-hmm. is often in the characters or the, you know, the magic, if you will. I don't know, maybe that's one of the reasons why they do so well, because it's so relatable in that sense. But I just think it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think that's one of the challenges with like a production renderer. Like, you want, when you're saying it's physically based, you don't necessarily want to constrain yourself to all of the laws of physics, because, like, you know, you want to do a flying jump or something like that, or
mm-hmm.
so being able to have that artistic flexibility is pretty key. So, yeah, I think that's from the ground up that was baked into Hyperion, so they can bend.
Definitely.
Physical rules.
Do you want to talk about some of the numbers that were associated with the Big Hero 6 one? 100,000 cash points randomly distributed within the individual scene. It's a big number.
Yeah, that's nuts. That's absolutely crazy. Just, yeah, so many light sources.
I'm just skimming, but yeah, it's many. The next picture is from your favourite Disney movie.
Banger.
One of my favorite Disney movies. One of my favorite Disney movies. The soundtrack's brilliant. It's from Moana, and is it Teka, the lava lady at the end?
Teka. Yeah, so Teka is
made
is a big
of
lava
fire,
monster.
Basically.
Lava boy. Yeah, so
made
Teka's
of lava made
monster.
Of lava, but also covered in smoke with lightning coming out of it. So again, think about that in terms of the rays,
physics, man,
the physics, you know, even like the glow through the smoke.
Yeah, so they had, so when they did Big Hero 6, that's 2014 it was released, and they were aiming for this MVP, but they didn't have, like, it wasn't feature complete in the same sense that like 40 years of RenderMan has been. But RenderMan had been going for an age and has all of these features built in. But when they went from using this engine for Big Hero 6, like, they hadn't done water scenes. They hadn't done... They had done some volume scattering, so I don't know. What was the... How is it different? I think it's just because, smoke was tricky.
Was it just the smoke? But then, I'm looking at your notes now.
Yeah. So they had... smoke was difficult. Where was my... had a note on the ocean rendering as well. That smoke within Teka's
I have you in front of me. You've written a single frame initially required 450 core hours to render a usable conversion.
That's obscene.
Which is
that's
bizarre.
Crazy.
I mean, how many frames is that guy on? Is Teka? I said guy. It's not a guy, if I recall correctly. How many frames are they on? It's absurd. And then
so doing that, and then what if you find a bug or you want to tweak something? It's stupid. But yeah, having it so long, yeah, it was pretty crazy. So what do they do? They use a fixed probability distribution.
I don't know what any of those words means, by the way. A fixed probability distribution scaled from emission power for a series of triangles in a mesh. But it cut the rendering time in half. is the headline.
Pretty much, yeah.
Lots of technology.
I think, what that was when they, each time there's a ray or a light matter interaction, so you're tracing this ray, you're either hitting a surface and reflecting off that, or if you're going through a media, you're like interacting with a particle of that media, so smoke particle. And rather than saying each time I interact with this particle, I like make a bunch more rays in exponential counts of directions, they narrowed that bounding volume to say, well, it's probably gonna, the most statistical statistically likely path that this ray will trace is this direction. So then that means you can scale it down.
And cut down on the rendering time, essentially. Power. Yeah.
Yeah. So it just means you've got to process a bit less. Sticking with...
Absolutely crazy.
Oh, my. Sticking with Moana, another natty thing that they had to work on was water. So I'm looking at Fig 5 at the moment.
Is this Fig 5? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll read it. It says, different types of water in Moana. Ocean with boat wakes top, shoreline with open ocean, and character interaction. And then, I love that it's called art-directed sentient water. So we got art-directed sentient water at the bottom. I'm not sure if that exists in real life, but it certainly exists inside Moana.
Maybe somewhere. But like, you look at those images and they just look like water.
They're beautiful.
It's crazy.
I feel like they look like more than water. It's crazy. Don't you feel like they look like more than water? Like they?
I don't know what you mean by more than water. Do you mean H3O?
H2O plus. I could tangent here. Did you know there's a show called H2O?
No.
It's apparently...
Is it good?
It's apparently about, like, Australian teenage mermaids, and if they get wet, they turn into mermaids. And the girls at school, like my year 10s and year 11s this year, have been quoting it incessantly. And I just keep wondering to myself, like, what if they sneeze and get water on their hands? Or what if it's like a particularly humid day? You know? I just don't understand. Like, anyway, what do I mean by more than water? I just think it looks more beautiful than in real life. That's what I mean.
Okay. All right.
Just think it looks prettier than in real life.
You're now making me think of
Luca?
Have you not seen Luca?
I haven't.
Another Pixar film.
Pixar or Disney?
It's similar to that then. I don't know.
I'm going to Google Luca.
But that's similar. Sea monster gets wet, turns into monster.
Oh, I definitely.
And there they dribble and
that.
They turn a little bit into. Well, point your peeps to that. That's a good one.
Okay, I must.
Anyway, so it's really good water.
Very pretty water. The prettiest water, I might even suggest.
So, I think. Well.
Do you want to cuddle, Wilma? Come and have a cuddle if you want to cuddle. Wait. Come here. My dog is, she really wants a cuddle, but she also wants me to not be wearing headphones so she can just jump all over me right now. hopefully she'll come for it. She's now laying down and looking at her toys, like, come play, Dad. She can wait.
So I made some scribbles, but I don't really know what to say about that.
Which scribbles are we talking here?
In the ocean rendering. So I guess cool stuff would be that the entire mesh of that ocean grid was a single mesh.
Yeah, so all
which
the way
makes
up
sense.
To horizon.
That makes sense. But I think they did natty stuff with,
Define natty for me. Yeah. Natty as in natty. Like nutty, like, ooh, as in
that's
really good.
Novel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's novel.
I think we probably want to look at the next figure, so figure 6 for that. So they had, So if you've got this uniform, like, mesh, I sort of do it.
Yeah,
mesh,
I see.
But it's to do with the photon distribution within your volume of ocean. If you're just uniformly throwing your photons into this scene, then you've got to throw lots and lots of photons at your scene to have it look just right. But like you can see here on the rock where you've got a bunch of photons going in, but not enough for it to look right.
Yeah. Is that A?
Yeah. And then when they did statistically sorting stuff, like where should these photons be from my camera field of view? You can redistribute those. So you've just got near the camera, lots of photons, further away, less photons. It's... Like, basically, they've just... This whole, like, ordeal is just... We've got obscene numbers of things, rays, photons, or whatever, and we're just going to sort them and batch them into...
When you say it like that, it sounds unremarkable, doesn't it?
all great things are, right?
I mean, I guess you're probably right.
Yeah. All right. Where next, Callum?
They have it's the animal movie with the funny sloth.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you another funny. I'll tell you another funny school story. I love this movie because I think Detective Hops is super cute. I really like Detective Hops. I think she's adorable. I love her little relationship with Mr. Fox. The kids at school were like, "You think a rabbit's fit?" I was like, "Really? We're going down this path, are we?" No, but I love Zootopia. This was
I don't
about
think
fur,
I've seen it enough to remember it, but
this is it, they really take the mick with the sloth scenes, and I love them. But this is about fur, if I recall correctly. High albedo fur requiring accurate multiple scattering, characters with complex colour variations, and crowds with lots of furry characters requiring efficient geometric representations and efficient traversal. So, talking about fur, what notes did you have for fur? I'm just sealing your notes now.
So, yeah, you are. It's fine.
It's fine. It's so actually great.
I think Zootopia was after Big Hero 6. So they had their Big Hero 6 stuff, and they had done some. They had done hair in Big Hero 6, but most of them had dark hair because dark haired characters. And so, like, it wasn't so much of a big deal. Mm-hmm. The artifacts that they were seeing. But if we like look at figure four, I don't know, A top, you've got lots of all of them. You've got different color fur. So you got like lighter furs. You've got different color furs. I didn't think fur was that complicated. But when you look at the numbers, it is kind of crazy. So the so for some of the scenes, they've got up to 5,000 characters in a frame. That's a lot of characters. Some of those will have up to 10 million hairs. Are you doing the math, Callum?
I mean, that's 10 million times 50, more. It's like 50 billion. 50 billion? Yeah, 50 billion, right?
Yeah, 50 billion. So you've got 50 billion things now. And then we've got 9 curve segments per hair. So each hair is like separated into 9 segments.
Sections.
But let's just say that's like 10. So that's imagine 50 billion. 500 billion. And then each segment. Oh, yeah, that's 9 curve segments per hair. And then there's 100 segments per curve. So 500 billion, 5 trillion, 50 trillion. So you've got 50 trillion. Segments in a scene. That's a lot.
And I love that you've just written memory killer sheep.
Yeah, they had some sheep that was just
I find it absolutely wild that like every individual hair that you see is separate. Like I would have imagined it would have just been like one block with a texture on it, but it's each hair is a block, you know. It's it's wild.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah,
wild.
It's absolutely mind-blowing when you look at the numbers. So when they had these issues, what they using their existing shading model from Big Hero 6, they had the for the brighter fur animals, it came out looking dirty and dark, and that's just because there's so many hairy bits in there. They were sending a bunch of photons in, but like I guess they weren't sending in enough photons. Like you need more signal for all of those like dark bits.
Yeah,
there's layers down of hair. So they did some cool stuff there with if you take your if you're describing your hair as a like a 3D
curve,
function,
I guess, yeah,
in like function space. They then flatten that by dimension. And that made things a bit more efficient. But also, when you're rendering that scene, you're trying to minimize an error between what your renderer is producing and what should your geometrical model is saying it should be. And yeah, they had some function that was then determinant on how bigger or how wide a it's so just like
I'm like actually really laughing here because I think you are astounding for trying to explain the complexity of this. I think it is I would need to sit down with a guy from Disney Hyperion for a few days to get my head around it.
It's pretty intense. Wild. Like, they've got a whole team working on this. It's a huge field.
Can we talk about... There are clouds, aren't there? I liked the clouds.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about the clouds.
That's good.
So, new system for clouds. I'll read figure 11 while you're finding your notes. In our old volume system, before shading a surface hit, a detailed PDF blue is split along the ray segment encoding transmittance, extinction, and a fluorescence estimate generated from the cache points. In scattering samples are drawn and enqueued into a future ray batch. In our new volume system, which is pictured on the right for YouTube viewers, a ray enters the volume and scatters many times based solely on the local scattering properties of the volume. Shadow rays dashed are used in conjunction with the next event estimation to important sample direct lighting contribution and enqueued into a future ray batch only after completely exiting the volume.
Some words there.
I thought when I said I'm going to read figure 11, I would pull that off. Didn't. I would be happy for that to be cut. To be honest with you, that was a lot. That was a lot of words, more than I was expecting.
Yeah, we're going to stick with that. Yes.
Summarize what I said in a sentence then, mister.
So going through volumes, so whether that's a cloud or water, or when you're doing volume scattering, you can be real intense. And at each interaction point, you can populate a bunch of calculations that help transfer bonus information when you go to your next event. So it bounces off there, you store a bunch of information, you go to your next scattering event, you've got some more information, and that really scales up and you've got lots of goof to track. And what they did within clouds to what they were seeing was when they were rendering clouds with, I think it was only 1,000 bounces. How many photons did they send it? So if I'm looking at figure 12, so here they limited their cloud to 254 bounces, which is pretty, that doesn't sound like a lot if you're doing that entire cloud.
But that,
with a fixed number of photons.
That old system, the old system cloud looks rubbish in comparison, doesn't it?
But that's only because it's really noisy and you don't have much signal. So if you threw another couple of million rays into that, it would look fine.
Yeah.
What they were seeing is that's a bunch of memory and makes things slow. So what they did was have a lightweight tracking algorithm. So they dropped some of the information like transmittance and extinction and fluent. I don't know what a fluent says.
I wonder if they dropped a bunch of that information. It almost sounds I don't think it is right, but it almost sounds like brightness or something like that.
Maybe?
Are you Googling it?
I am, but I don't know. It's the optical energy per unit area, maybe. Okay, yeah, brightness.
Brightness sounds, that sounds like brightness, doesn't it? Optical per unit area.
Lewins. So then with this new lightweight algorithm that just ignores a bunch of stuff when you're in the clouds, it kind of makes decent clouds pretty efficiently. I like to quote from this section. So, what they did is they required an aggressive Russian roulette as well as an independently controlled volume bounce limit to prevent ray explosion. What?
I like to imagine ray explosion is the rays just coming together and exploding out of the cloud or something. I don't understand what it means by aggressive Russian roulette. Is that just randomness, I suppose?
It sounds like random. Mm. It sounds like they got I don't know what an aggressive random number generator is.
It's but... like Russian roulette, but you put Wonderful. Five bullets in the six bullet gun instead of just one.
That's probably a neat-ish time to wrap up. So we've looked at a bunch of case studies. I'm enamoured with the make this a production-ready thing. It's crazy. Give me the MVP. Give me the features that I really need. And what I also really liked is they were really, when they were designing this iteratively, they were, aggressive is the wrong, they were proactively reducing. So this team would have been creating a renderer, but it's got a front, and the back end is doing all this computation madness with rays, but the front end is exposing what we saw in figure 16 to the artist. Here, just composite a bunch of textures and light sources and renders, and you've got your scene. But they were proactive with trying to remove UI elements from that.
Mm.
Because they're like, well, you guys just don't need it, or you're using it not how it was. Anyway, very proactive development that was very user-focused, which is quite nice.
I feel like one thing that we touched on a little bit, but I just want to reiterate as we are going to slowly start wrapping up, was the focus on, like, artists' workflow. Makes me very happy, because I think it's not abnormal when you hear about, like, big corporations like Disney. Like, I don't know about you. I'm a bit of a stickler for, like, YouTube video essays. I bloody love a video essay, right? And the amount of video essays I've seen that, like, poo-poo on corporations like Disney makes me quite happy to know that, like, in some way, making art is still, like, the focus, you know? And all of this extortionately complicated technology is to enable the artists, and that makes me very happy.
Yeah, that was like philosophy going into this. It's not
definitely,
we want to make realer things, we're just doing this for the artists,
and it's real even better. Like, if I don't think we'd want Disney to be photorealistic, really, would we?
I don't think so.
The magic of it is that it has a style. And I love that we've seen the style change, because, like, it is a very particular style these days. Like, no matter what movie you watch, they all, you know, all the characters have similar but different features, faces, movements, you know?
Yeah. It's darn impressive.
I just realized one thing we didn't talk about, but I'm not going to bring it up now.
What did we miss?
What do you think I've missed?
Man.
Oh, you said R.
You tell me.
I was gonna look at where is it? Fig 15 with the artistic manipulation. Actually, let's talk about it really quickly. So you've got the raw rendered image and the final frame next to it, and it leads in quite nicely with what I just said about artists first, because that raw rendered image, still not as good as having that final frame with the little artist touch in it. And there are so, like the reducing of the exposure and all of that. It looks nice.
Yeah, all of the wizardry with the textures and stuff.
Yeah.
It links so, like, although, yeah, you get the impression when I was reading this that this rendering team, they provide this as a tool, and the, like, when we look at Figure 16, like, you can see the artist will pull in a bunch of different renders, so under lighting conditions and whatnot. But really, the artistry of actually stitching that all together, that's still, although it doesn't look like you're using a paintbrush, it's still,
well,
that artistic
art comes in many
expression
forms, I suppose, right? Doesn't it?
Yeah. So that's a look at that pipeline. That's a thing of beauty.
That's mad. I can't even fathom it. It's a good job I don't work there. I'd lose my job.
Yeah, Moana. Beautiful island. Look at that.
It is stunning. So go on, final thoughts. Favourite Disney movie?
Favorite Disney movie? I don't know. It's got to be Moana.
I'm putting you on the spot here. Why is it Moana?
It's probably because it's got such good ray tracing in it. Like, before I was even reading this, I was like, oh my god, Moana. I can render the islands.
Okay, but what's your favorite in terms of story and music, Jamie? What's the one that you really, really remember?
In story, I don't know. Probably Moana. In music, Moana's good, but I quite like Coco as well.
Coco's amazing.
Maybe Luca for story. I don't know. It's too dependent on what I watched last.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, probably my all-time favourite Disney movie. It's an old one, though. It's probably Disney's Hercules. But that's not the same sort of animation.
Still beautiful.
Yeah, I miss a lot of the drawn style.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a style that Disney should try and bring back, maybe. Wasn't the last one Princess and the Frog the last drawn one like that? Get that, Will.
You're telling me. I don't know.
Me and Jamie, I'm pretty sure you were there. We went to see the Princess and the Frog when we were in sixth form.
Did we?
We did. And I remember it very well because I raided a whiskey bottle And I half filled a 500 ml Coke bottle, and we snuck it in. Yeah,
Nice.
I have a vivid memory of walking up, you know, the big long hill that goes from the cinema to the town centre. Walking up there with everyone, and not being particularly sober. So there, that's my final thought.
From the Princess and the Frog.
From The Princess, which actually is a goated movie. It's so good. It's so
I'll
good.
have to watch it again.
You w really
All
must.
right.
It's like all set in like New Orleans, and there's like jazz music. There's a little crocodile that plays a trumpet. It's amazing. Or well, I suppose it's an
That does sound
alligator.
great.
I suppose
That
it's
does
an
sound
alligator, not a crocodile, but you know what I mean. Anyway, where can people find us, Jamie McMillan?
People can find us on YouTube. We're there. You can find us on most places you find your podcasts. When in doubt, head to our website, find our RSS link, and add that to your. Who does that? I don't think anybody does that. You
I
could do
don't think
that.
I've ever done that. But yeah, it's good that it's there. Osmosiscast.com is our
Yeah,
website.
that's the one.
Awesome. So I've
Check it
been
out.
Callum Morris, and you've been.
I've been Jamie. This has been great. This has been Osmosis Cast.
This has been amazing.
Take it easy,
Thank you
everybody.
so much for listening. Goodbye.